Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to Creature Feature, production of iHeartRadio. I'm your host of Mini Parasites, Katie Golden. I studied psychology and evolutionary biology, and today on the show, you, yes you, can be a citizen scientist. This spring and summer, there are things to look out for in your own backyards. I am talking about special events that are current, that are happening now or in a few weeks, that you can keep alert to in your backyard. Well, if you live in North America in certain locations. But in general, you can be a citizen scientist. That means observing animals and then making reports to various research institutions, to things like iNaturalist. And this actually really helps researchers. So we are going to be talking about new birds. We're going to be talking about incredible broods. We are going to talk about something that was discovered by citizen scientists that sounds like it came out of the horror game / TV show The Last of Us. Discover this and more as we answer the age-old question, when is it a good time for your butt to be a fungi? Joining me today is voice actress, host of the JV Club, and a ton of other podcasts, Janet Varney. Welcome!
Thank you so much. I wasn't sure if I was allowed to laugh when you said, can your butt be a fungi and when? And not so laughter. I stifled that giggle.
Laughter is not allowed. Not permitted.
Great.
This is a very serious...
Oh, no, I'm doing it. I'm breaching our contract.
Yeah, it's a very serious science show. No laughter, no fun. Everything's really dry.
All right. Okay.
No, I'm so excited to have you. You suggested, I really liked your topic suggestion, which is talking about like the kinds of animals that you can find sort of in your own city, in your own backyard. And I really love this concept, and I love the way in which that people like you and me can engage in science, because I am a science communicator. I'm not a scientist. I don't do research, but do I take photos of animals and then send them to iNaturalist or to researchers who I know are looking for these photos? I don't send them randomly to people who don't know what's going on. But yes, I do. And it's really fun. It's really exciting. Like once I snapped a photo of alligator lizards mating, so I sent it to Greg Pauly, he's a herpetologist at the LA Natural History Museum, and it's amazing. It's so cool to be able to interact with scientists and with science and research this way, and it's actually really helpful.
Yeah, that's totally awesome. We have I live right near Griffith Park in Los Angeles, and there's like a ton of, you know, kind of public facing stuff that you can do to get involved. And one of the things that we do, not just in Griffith Park, but in my own neighborhood, is Raptor Watch, is, you know, keeping your eyes on certain raptors' nests and reporting back. I'm gone a lot, so I haven't been able to sign up because the last thing I want to do is like not show up for something
raptor
that I
duty.
Think is wonderful and important. Raptor duty. I don't want to fail raptor duty. But you're right. The feeling of knowing that like you're engaging with your environment and you're even helping us better understand our environment and respect it and all that kind of stuff is like the coolest.
Well, so I have exciting news for you because this is something that is actually in your neck of the woods. This is a new bird just dropped in Southern California.
They dropped a new bird.
They released a new bird, kind of literally. I'll explain. So there is a small bird called Swinhoe's White Eye. It is a little guy. It's like smaller than a playing card. It's got this cute little tan belly, this chartreuse head, wings, and butt, and then this beautiful, Vogue, glamorous white eyeliner. These are cute little guys, and they are killing it with that eyeliner.
They really are. This is a hot look. I love it. The chartreuse. I did not really, you know, from just thinking about scale from looking at the photo initially, I did not realize they were that tiny. Are they? They look sort of goldfinchy,
yeah.
But not. Is there? Yeah. Is that that? Maybe that's what I. Because we have tons of goldfinches, so hopefully I won't mistake this little guy for a goldfinch and then not appreciate how special it is.
I mean, it's that. I think that greeny tinge. And that white around the eye is
yeah,
really helpful.
For that white.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've tried before using white eyeliner. It did not work for me.
Oh, me neither.
I think it's like, I mean, you know, I think both of our complexions are, you know, easily washed out by say like, hey, it's like I'm already very pale. If I add white eyeliner to it, it doesn't work. But if our skin was chartreuse, like this bird,
oh, yeah.
I think it would work.
I've never wanted chartreuse skin more or at all. Now I do.
So
yeah, I love this little critter.
They're very, very pretty. And if you are a bird watcher or backyard birder or just general bird appreciator in Southern California, you may spot them, especially in a tree that has flowers or berries.
Hey.
They often like to sip nectar or eat berries. Even like hummingbird feeders, if you have them, you might catch one of them sort of.
That was my next question. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they don't have that really long beak that the hummingbird has, so they can't get quite as deep. But they still do have a bit of a beak, and it's a little curved, so they can get in there a little bit. You can kind of, it's interesting because you can see these nectivorous birds like this one that sip nectar, and you can see the beak. It's like kind of long, a little bit pointy, but many stages away from the hummingbird. But you can see that like maybe evolutionary path of this bird could have been maybe similar to a hummingbird's ancestor with a shorter beak, but still sipping nectar.
Sure. And just because I don't want anyone to worry that you have an expert by any means in any way on the show, I'm happy to represent the most rudimentary of enthusiasts. But so a bird like this, like with a hummingbird, they don't they have like a little tongue that is also involved in the beak?
Mm-hmm.
But this little character, is he or she sipping with is a tongue in play or
yes.
Is it mostly beak action? Okay.
Yes, yes. That tongue is going to help them sip. It's not quite as long and fancy as the hummingbird, but that narrow beak, a little bit curved, and then a little bit of tongue action is going to help them draw up nectar into their beak.
Cool.
But they're unlike hummingbirds. They can also, they can diversify. So they can eat berries, which, you know, can open and close their mouth pretty easily and snap up a berry. If you have like a lot of like flowering lush plants in your area, you may spot one of these. But here's the catch. They are not really supposed to be in Southern California. They are from East and Southeast Asia, completely across the world. So, Janet, I want you to guess how they might have gotten to Southern California.
Well, I'm going to say not migration. I'm going to say brought over to sell commercially, perhaps, like seeing that there was some incentive there. It's harder for me to imagine somehow these ending up on like a cargo ship just randomly and like building a nest and hanging out there. So I guess that's that would be my guess.
That is absolutely correct.
All right.
These little guys, the thought, it's not exactly known, but the leading theory is that they escaped from the pet trade in Orange County, California. Mm. And so we actually have another bird, the Chevron parakeet, that also escaped the pet trade, and you can see it all over Southern California. But this one is much more recent. So this came around 2006, and they've been in Southern California since 2006, but recently their population seems to have a big boom. There's been many more reported sightings. It seems like they are finding their niche and reproducing quite a bit. So there's always like, so they are an invasive species, but invasive species can range in terms of how bad they are, right? In terms of like how much they impact local flora, fauna, how they impact the plants, how they impact other birds, other animals, because like they can either directly, you know, say overfeed on berries or overfeed on plants and then cause damage to native plants, or they can outcompete native birds or other or insects or something. So there are a lot of factors in terms of how they could have an effect. But so far, we don't actually know if they are having a negative effect on the local native plants and animals.
So they are like the opposite end of the known spectrum at this time than, say, the feral cat in Australia, which I was just reading about.
Exactly.
And feeling very bad for the bilbies.
Yeah, the bilbies.
They're so cute. I know it's an aside, but boy, oh boy, are they cute.
I judge an animal in terms of their cuteness mostly by the nose. The snoot is a very important factor in the cuteness.
I would say ears and snoot, and this one has both. Very adorable ears, very adorable snoot.
They did you see the whole thing of like they do the bilby, the Easter bilby instead of the Easter bunny? Because
no,
yeah. So rabbits are also invasive, also bad for bilbies and other animals, not because of predation, but because they are competing with them, right?
Right.
And so, and they're bad for the local vegetation, and so they are. Just as they're at war with feral cats, they're at war with feral rabbits.
Oh,
and so sort of as a branding thing of like, hey, we don't actually want rabbits here. They did the whole like Easter bilby, get a chocolate bilby.
Oh, I am
bilby.
So doing that here.
It's
I am
adorable.
So taking on the Easter bilby.
You can get a chocolate Easter bilby. I don't know how expensive the shipping would be from Australia, but you know.
Probably a lot.
Worth it. So far. These little white-eyed birds, it is unknown what impact they have. And in fact, it's unknown how big their population is. There's been more reports of sightings. It seems like their population is on the rise, but researchers need more data. So that is something that people can do from their backyards, right? Or on your walk or whatever. If you see one of these birds, and you can look up pictures of the Swinhoe white eye bird. And if you see one of these, you can snap a photo or make a report of where you see it. You can go through like iNaturalist is the main one. There's an article called On the Brink of Explosion, Identifying the Source and Potential Spread of Introduced Zosterops White Eyes in North America. Also an article in the LAist by Jacob Margolis that has more information. But yeah, generally, just if you're a bird enthusiast and you see one of these guys and you take a photo or observe just like where it is, where you saw it, you can actually add a data point to the research that is going on about the spread of these little guys.
There it is. I'm looking at it right now. Okay, so Sosterops, that's quite
it sounds
a,
like a
that's
disease.
That's a spelling. I know.
It's actually
it really
their full
is.
Name
I mean,
is the full okay. scientific name is Zosterops simplex, which makes it sound like a mouth
oh, like,
disease. Like
yeah,
herpes.
It really does. Yeah, it really does. Zosterops white eyes. I have a really bad case of Zosterops white eyes.
No, I know. It's like, oh, I don't want to be around you. I don't want to catch your Zosterops white eyes.
It's interesting too, because when you talk about when you were talking about the population boom, but also that if that's relative to getting more engagement from the public. You know, my first thought was like, gosh, how do you, I guess you can look at overall the kind of data that you're getting in from the public to see if there's an increase in general and not just about these birds in particular, because that seems like such a challenge to go, well,
yes.
Are people just seeing them more? Like, what are all the reasons that people are A, seeing them more and B, reporting them more? And is it truly a population boom or is there something else going on that we have to isolate and identify? You know?
You're thinking exactly like a biologist, like a scientist, because that is... That is one of the issues with things like this, because if you get if you encourage more observations, you're going to get more observations, and then that might make it look like there's a big population boom, like people are more aware of it, so they're making observations. But there are ways to like kind of overcome that, right? Because you start the clock at the point at which it's like, well, we had this awareness at this point, so then we look at the growth from that point onwards. You can also do things like, okay, we made you know, all of sort of California or something, Southern California reads this newspaper or whatever and has this thing. And then so they're all making these observations and then seeing if you see like a change, right? Like in the observations, like maybe they start more in Southern California. Do they move, you know, to the north? Do they move to the east? You know, so it's you're absolutely right. It's really important to separate out like, oh, we just have a bunch of new observations. Well, is that because people are noticing it more? Sort of like how, you know, we may suddenly get a bunch of diagnoses for, say, like a disease that we've now become more aware of. And it's like, oh, everyone has this now. It's like, well, it's
right.
Because now we're aware of it. Same thing with this bird. I'm so mean to this bird. I keep like comparing it to a disease.
I mean, that's just what's going to happen if you're an invasive species. It's not these guys' fault. But I will say, side note, when I tucked this into DuckDuckGo and I looked up Zosterops wide-eye, you know how it gives you like a suggestion of what you might be looking for? It was very eager to fill in for me Zosterops white eyes for sale.
Oh, wow. Really?
Which seems telling, right? I mean, it thinks that must be what I came onto a search engine for.
Yeah.
So I find that very interesting.
This is one of the problems with the exotic pet trade. I am, you know, I am a big fan of people keeping pets. And I understand that a lot of pets that we keep are not going to be native to the region in which we live. And that's often not a problem. But it can often be a problem, especially for a pet that can easily escape, right? Like there are types of like snakes, birds, you know, rodents. Like these are pets that can fairly easily escape, and especially animals that have a high fecundity can reproduce fairly quickly. You know, that can be a big problem. So yeah, I mean, right now it doesn't seem like maybe they're a problem, but it's also there just hasn't been a lot of research. So there could be problems that this adorable little bird causes.
I mean, it is so cute.
It's so cute. It's not its fault, right? Like, they are adorable. They didn't choose to be sold in the pet trade. And, you know, they're just trying to make it work. But yeah, I think it's funny because, like, when we think of invasive species, we think of something menacing and, you know, like the pythons in Florida. But really, it's... It can be an adorable little bunny rabbit in Australia,
sure.
Or an adorable bird. But yeah, so far we don't know. Because like I think the chevron parakeets are relatively benign in Southern California.
Yeah.
So hopefully this bird will be benign and it'll just be another cute little bird to see. But for instance, in Hawaii, a similar species of bird, not exactly this one, but a similar species has wreaked havoc there because it
outcompetes from the native birds. And, right. you know, it can cause these native birds to become endangered. And it's, you know, can be really bad.
Well, the smaller the ecosystem and the more, like, you know, island bound mm-hmm. or whatever, I'm sure the higher the chances are that something kind of severe could happen. I mean, it's interesting. I'm like wondering if these guys build their nests, you know, in the same kind of safe areas that like a goldfinch would, because you also wonder, like, could a predatory species adapt to, I mean, listen, I'm not excited about, you know, apex predators eating these little birds' eggs or eating these little birds. But I also wonder, because there are so many predators in Southern California, if, you know, there could be some sort of like accidental population control that happens just as those predatory species adapt to having the availability of these little cuties that I don't want anyone to eat. But, you know, got to keep the system going, everybody.
Yeah. I mean, the
got to keep it safe.
The general rule is that the more similar the species behavior is to the other native species, then, yeah, the predators are just going to be like another thing on the menu. Great. If it has special adaptations, which I don't know of any special adaptations that this bird has that would be particularly effective against snakes and other predators in Southern California. So I think it will just be on the menu with the other birds, but maybe not. You know, it's another thing is that it is in an environment that is very different from its original home in East and Southeast Asia, where it's very, very lush, this sort of kind of semi-tropical area. California, Southern California, is a desert. But the reason it's able to thrive here is because human beings don't necessarily want to live without flowers and cool plants. And so we plant things that are not native that have lush flowering fruits and or lush flowers and fruits and berries. And so then these birds will join us in the suburbs and urban areas and basically exploit the setup that we have created, this like fake lushness in what is a desert.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I feel good yet nervous about these little Zostrop simplexes. I'm going to keep my eyes peeled. I got to tell you, I'm looking at the picture right underneath. Very different kind of a look from this other winged creature. I'm trying to yes. have... I mean, it's beautiful and...
A little unsettling.
Maybe a little creepy. Maybe a little creepy.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we are going to talk about this mystery winged creature that has Janet unsure how to feel.
Perfect.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
All right, so we are back. And Janet, you have spotted our next little member of the mystery crew of creatures that people should keep an eye out for. And what are you looking at here? How would you describe this interesting little guy?
Okay, where do I start? First of all, I don't know. I mean, again, not a biologist, not a zoologist, not a, so I'm really trying to get creative here. I'm going to say the first thing that catches your eye about this, aside from this creature's eyes, which I'll talk about in just a second, is this really beautiful wing that is mostly transparent, but it has, it's almost like, I mean, it's almost like a piece, like the top part of, you know, if you look, I think about the a quarter of a butterfly wing. If you're sort of thinking about looking straight on at a butterfly, you imagine the upper left or the upper right piece of that. Imagine that that has more transparency, like you would maybe imagine from a fly's wing or something. But it's very, but it is very pretty. So there's some white and kind of, I mean, there's some kind of gold or yellow coloration. It looks like there's a little orange in there. Lots of black, kind of like a black lining that creates these little segments of the wing. And then I want what I want you to do is then I want you to imagine that it's on a tiny catfish because its body, I can't see most of its body. I feel like I'm only looking at its sort of head and right past its head, but there's something sort of fish-like about it. And then I want you to go ahead and just stick two bright large red orbs on for eyes, and then just throw on some little crab claws for not claws, but the legs, crab legs, not their claws, but the some little crab legs for so that it can land, get around, and scuttle around on stuff. That's my best attempt to describe this. How did I do?
You have painted a beautiful brain picture. This is the way I would describe it is like if you took a giant fly and mashed it together with like a grasshopper and then made it look really surprised at all times.
Yeah, definitely grasshopper. I guess I could have gone that route. But I decided to go with a more shocking fish.
Well, it is chunky though. It's shiny and chunky, so it does have, I can totally see sort of that crustacean-y look to it, which is very interesting. Keep that in mind for later. Stick a little pin in that. So this is a cicada.
It's just as after all that, it's a cicada.
It is a cicada. It's, you probably heard it, but have you like seen one up close like this?
I mean, I thought I had, I mean, I feel like I've seen cicadas, but I guess I haven't seen, or do they all have like bright red bead eyes?
Not all of them. There are different species, but a lot of them do have
I mean, I've had one land on me, much to my chagrin, in Arizona. And for sure, in Arizona, you know, the thing you're going to see more than the cicadas is the little crispy shells that they leave when they shed their skin, which are very fun to pick off of, to kind of crunch into a dust after you pick them up off of a nice piece of bark. But I did not. I mean, I guess if you made me guess, I should have come to cicada, especially when you gave me the grasshopper hint.
Well, I think out of context, it's surprising to see cicadas. I always, like, I hear their sound, and I'm like, I don't know, I'm thinking of some kind of, like, grasshopper-like thing or something, and they have a...
An evil tiny robot.
Yeah,
just
a little
tiny robot. Tiny, it's such a metallic sound.
Yes, it does make a very metallic sound.
It's shocking.
But the reason I bring up cicadas is that if you live in North America... in the Midwest and Southeast United States, you are in for a treat that rivals the total eclipse that just happened, because there is going to be a double brood emergence this spring. So it is going to be a very special event. So cicadas do emerge every year, right? Like we have this yearly emergence of cicadas. Their life cycle is essentially the females will lay eggs into trees. They cut a little slice into the tree, lay their eggs there. The eggs hatch into nymphs, little tiny babies. They drop down to the ground, burrow under the ground. They can go as far as around 2 feet under the ground. And then they stay there for at least a year. And then all at once, they all come out. The males make this incredibly loud buzzing sound to attract the females. There's a mad dash to get the mating done, to lay the eggs, and then they all die in a few weeks. But this is the thing.
What a life.
I know, amazing, right? Like, so you spend most of your time as a juvenile just hanging out underground, sipping on the sap from tree roots. And then you have like 3 to 6 weeks of total madness of just trying to mate as fast as you can. And then you drop dead.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, listen, you get some underground, you get some above ground by being in the trees. And you get to drive people crazy with how incredibly loud you are. I mean, this is an insect that was linked as a possible cause of, I hate to use the term Havana syndrome because I think that I know that that's like very hurtful to the Cuban people who are like, please don't put the name of our city into this thing that you think is like a sonic weapon. But you know, I've listened to a great podcast about it actually, which I wish I could remember the name of, but it's really good, about that phenomenon. And when they first played, like that, you know, the whole sort of like misunderstanding, which was kind of debunked as like, no, this isn't actually what this was. And it's not even what the people who had this thought it was. It's just sort of it's just an unfortunate situation where there happened to be a bunch of really loud cicadas.
Yeah.
That they were like, could this have anything to do with why we're having these symptoms? And it was like, no, it doesn't. And the symptoms still happened. But the first time I heard it, I was like, well, that's cicadas.
Yeah.
Like that sound that, you know, feels like, and it's an assault to your ears is cicadas.
It's a complete sensory experience.
Bless them.
Well, how do we know that the cicadas aren't in league with the Cuban government to undermine America?
We definitely don't
know that. No. Yeah. I have nothing.
So a double brood. How did that happen? How is there a double set coming?
So this is very interesting. So there are some species that they go through a yearly life cycle. There are others, and those are called annual cicadas. There are other cicadas who are periodical cicadas, and they have a life cycle that can range from 2 years to 17 years. And so that means that when the nymphs pop out of the trees, burrow underground, they can spend up to 17 years of their life just waiting underground, sipping on tree root juices. And then at the 17-year mark, all of them all at once emerge and do the crazy mating, just orgy fest for a few weeks. And the double brood is because there is a brood, a 13-year periodical cicada brood and a 17-year periodical cicada brood that have aligned. So they are emerging at the same time. And this is something that hasn't happened for 200 years. So,
wow.
Yeah, because the synchronicity of it. The last time this happened was 200 years ago. The next time this happened, it's going to be another like 200 years. It's going to be in 2045. So it is really incredible. And so there are going to be anywhere from like billions to potentially like a trillion cicadas, just like, which Yikes! Seems made up. That seems like too many that are going to emerge. And so if you are near the cicada geddon, which is happening in the Midwest and Southeast United States, you will start to notice holes popping out of the ground. And then you're going to notice just a deafening cacophony of cicadas making an incredible sound. It is not the end times. You are not about to be raptured. These are cicadas. And they will mate over the course of a few weeks. Then they'll die. And yeah, you're going to find all those like crunchy little shells everywhere. It's they look intimidating sometimes because they're pretty big. They're, you know, like bigger than my thumb a little bit. But yeah, they are totally harmless. They don't want to mess with you. They don't want to bite you. They're not like venomous.
They don't want to have sex with you. Again, they do mm-hmm. not want to have sex with you.
Not with you. With anything vaguely cicada shaped yet. So you can celebrate Cicadageddon by just observing all the cicadas, by enjoying the tranquility of like a billion cicadas all screaming.
I wonder if there's going to be more earplug purchases than in past years year in those areas.
That'd be interesting to track. My husband is an economist. I'm going to suggest that to him as a research topic. Like earplugs and cicadas, is there a connection?
It just doesn't seem possible. Like, and this is the same with crickets, I guess. You know, you just sort of, we all take for granted. I mean, I think I did as a kid. I feel like I was a fairly curious kid, but you also, when you're younger, there are some things that you just kind of take at face value. And I guess I didn't spend as much time as maybe I should have thinking about the immense noise that comes from this tiny thing.
Well, it's so interesting because while crickets are, you know, they can project for sure, but cicadas are particularly loud. Cicadas are a little bit different from stridulators like crickets. So they do produce sound mechanically, not through like a voice, but they actually have these, instead of just rubbing one body part against another, they have these what are called timbals. They are these like structures, these kind of membranous structures, you know, what's it called?
Like symbols?
Like symbols.
Rhymes with timbals.
It does rhyme with timbals, but you know, like the monkey that slaps the symbols together. These are timbals. So they are connected to muscles. They vibrate them really rapidly.
Vibration. Yes, that makes sense.
Vibration that is very, very rapid. And they also have sort of a resonance chamber. And so like basically, you know how like you can like wiggle a metal sheet and make a thunder sound? It's like that, but with a bunch of these little membranes. If you this is what's interesting about cicadas is they kind of have this like mechanical look. If you sort of look at this timbal structure, it looks sort of like a bunch of layers of metal together, but these are actually just like these sort of thin membranes. They vibrate, and then their bodies are designed as a resonance chamber, and it's such a rapid force that they can actually produce from this thing that's relatively small, they can produce a sound that's nearly as loud as like a chainsaw.
I mean, that is nuts. And so, okay, so the little critters that are coming out of the ground, that they're male and female, that mm-hmm. both in the broods that are coming out, and the females, they're just going somewhere too. I mean, are they just kind of like in the trees also?
They are looking.
And they're just sort of like
they're
picking
looking,
whoever's, yeah.
Depends on the species. Some of them, like they're both mobile and they're looking for each other. And the male's making the sound and the female's going for it. But in some species, it's like the males stay put and then the females have to come to them because the males are lazy. And, you know, it's like, well, you have to come over here.
They're like, baby, I'm exhausted. Listen, I'm in a band. If you want to hang out with me, you got to come to my band's shows. I'm too busy. I'm either rehearsing my band or I'm performing with my band or I'm traveling with my band. Baby, you want to be with me? Come to where the band is. You know what I'm talking about, girl?
Exactly. We've all been through this. We've all had a cicada in our life. But one interesting thing about these is that you would think you'd wonder like, well, why do they need 17 or 13 years underground? That seems excessive. Like they don't need all that time to develop. A lot of cicadas.
Talk about being a brooding teenager, pun intended.
Exactly.
You never come out of your room. You dug yourself 2 feet underground. Yeah. Come on. Come see the world.
They are a whole teenager by the time they emerge.
Yeah.
And so
no wonder they're so horny.
Oh, man. It's so good they don't have internet, these cicadas.
I know.
Can you imagine?
Listen, tree roots talk to each other. I don't know. They could be a little neural network internet down there.
The reason for it's still not exactly known why they do this, but the leading theory is that it is a way to kind of like create an unpredictability about like when they emerge. The reason that they all emerge at once is fairly straightforward. Safety in numbers. If you are part of a huge brood, then it is just statistically less likely you get eaten, even though a lot of you are going to get eaten. But to emerge at such a like weird, like periodical thing of like every 13 years, every 17 years, there are other broods that do it at different intervals. That is potentially to make it difficult for predators, parasites, and other and like pathogens, the three P's, from adapting to you. Essentially, like if they adapt to your life cycle, like you emerge every year, maybe a pathogen or a predator or a parasite will learn like, hey, they come out every year, and so I adapt in order to exploit this yearly emergence. But if you're only coming out every 13 years or 17 years, this is an irregularity, and it's a long period of time, so you may be going beyond the life cycle of a lot of predators, of a lot of things that would exploit you, and so it is harder for them to specifically adapt strategies against you to either exploit you as a parasite or as a predator. That doesn't mean that predators don't eat these. They do. They eat them, a lot of them. But the point is like having like a special adaptation that makes you just a master at cicada munching or cicada parasitizing, or even like a virus or a pathogen that could adapt to it. Like with this like weird interval, like it actually makes them kind of a hard target to adapt to, except for when they're underground. And there are actually things like fungal infections and nematodes and things underground that can parasitize them while they are in that period, which is really interesting. But you know,
is that kind of the only thing that can happen to you when you're down there, or can like some sort of burrowing critter find you, just stumble across you and go, hey, I'm a offhand, I can't think of a single one. Mole? I don't think moles eat cicadas.
Moles will do it.
Do they?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. No, if they can be definitely preyed upon underground by burrowing animals. It's just that it is not as exploited a region as, say, the surface, right? Like burrowing animals, they have to put in work to do their tunnels. And so, you know, the excavation is, you can only excavate so much of the ground. And so, yeah, they will still be preyed upon. They will still have issues underground, but it is safer than the surface. And speaking of eating these guys, they are edible for people. We can eat them. And I have never had a cicada, but I have heard that they actually taste fairly good, similar to like, say, seafood, kind of. Like you were saying, they kind of look a little crustacean-y.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true, because I have never tried it. But if you live in one of these areas where there's going to be this mass emergence, check out like your local rest. If you're adventurous, if this sounds interesting to you, sometimes like local restaurants will start offering cicada meals. So like essentially they collect the cicadas, they prepare them, cook them, and you can eat them.
Good source of protein, like a cricket, like
yeah,
when we talk
absolutely.
About cricket protein powder and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, they're meat. They're bug meat.
Man, I think you'd have to char that baby pretty black for me to... I'd need to be like, what I taste is the taste of just like burnt wood.
I'm
not sure. I've eaten a grasshopper, but
really, yeah. What'd you think?
I think it was like a chocolate covered grasshopper. Mm. So it was one of those things where you're like, oh, you've done everything you can to disguise and sort of, you know, nullify whatever bug eating experience you're supposed to have. Like, I definitely haven't had like, hey, here's a, you know.
Yeah.
Here's a baked grasshopper. Yes. Nothing but grasshopper.
Here is a tart with grasshoppers all lined up like pecans. Yeah, I'm not much of a insectivore myself. I want to be, like, I think it would be cool. And I wish I did not have the sort of like revulsion towards eating insects that I have. Like, because it's just like, well, now there's this whole cuisine that I can't have because I have this cultural notion that bugs is gross. I'm not supposed to eat them. I've eaten ants.
Same.
I think I had a cricket once. But
yeah,
it's just, it's hard for me to get past that. And I wish I could because, hey, you know what? Like, food's food. And
food,
I don't want to be
yeah.
so, I don't want to be so picky. But yeah.
Let me ask you this quick question. And please tell me if we're getting off topic, because you know I could talk to you for 6 hours about almost any subject. But so with something like that, how much of that revulsion, you don't have to know the answer to this, but I'm interested if you have any speculation on it. How much of something like that is like, because, you know, for example, when you find that you're afraid of a certain type of creature, and you know, you can have a conversation about that. Most people sort of understand, like, well, you know, to have a sort of genetic predisposition towards fearing spiders or towards fearing rats or towards fearing snakes, like, there's reasons for those predispositions to exist, and some of them may be happening at the genetic level, like at the cellular level. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering with, you know, the sort of revulsion around insects, like, had you and I been raised in a similar environment except for our parents or our small community or our city or our state or whatever, embraced eating insects more, do you think that, you know, we would just completely be fine with it? Do you think that there would be like some level of aversion that we couldn't put our finger on? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I've actually thought about this a lot. This is a great question.
Okay, good.
I mean, there are absolutely certain aversions we have that may be innate in terms of like things that are like spider shaped, snake shaped. We have sort of this like innate kind of like reflex, which can be overridden by, say, learning about them or culturally overridden. People keep snakes as pets. People keep tarantulas as pets. These kinds of fears can be overwritten by new information. Eating insects, it's hard to say whether we have an innate revulsion to insects in terms of a food source. My suspicion is that maybe for some insects, we might, things that are pests, right? That like are things that we may see as like unsanitary or pests, like parasites.
A cockroach
perhaps there is.
I mean,
some...
we are apes. I mean,
but
I guess we were eating
thing.
A lot of grubs
exactly,
when we were apes.
Exactly. And so we do have an evolutionary history of being insectivorous. And you know, even with parasites, right? Like you pick mites and ticks and stuff and fleas off of your friend and you eat it. And so in terms of what we do know is there are a lot of human cultures that exist today where insect eating is not taboo. It is not considered gross and people enjoy eating insects. And so it is clearly something that, in answer to your question of like, if we had been raised different, would we find would we find insects gross to eat? No, I don't think so. I think if we had been raised that we eat cicadas, you know, every year in a big cicada eating festival, I think we would not find that gross.
Which is, I agree with you. It's kind of a bummer. Like, it feels
it
like a missed opportunity.
Exactly. This is how I feel. It's like, I want to, if I have children, I want to figure out a way to not make them feel grossed out by the concept of eating bugs, you know, just in case, like, you know, the meat industry collapses in the future.
Yeah.
And you know what? Like, give them more options. But no, but I mean, it's also like bugs are kind of pretty and some of them sort of look like candy. I don't know. Like if I look at a bug, I'm like, that might be kind of fun to eat. But then when I think about eating it with all the little legs and the segments, then I'm like, no, that seems bad.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. But then part of me is like, ah, but I'm curious.
Yeah.
So it's hard to override the revulsion, but I want to. But yeah, I think so. There's two options, I think. One is that we could have an innate aversion to it, but one that is overridden by culture, or we do not have an innate aversion to it. And so depending on your culture, you're either taught an aversion to insects or you are not taught it. And I suspect it's the latter. I don't think we're born with an aversion to eating insects, unless maybe there's a very specific kind, like maybe we have an aversion to spiders. That would make sense.
Yeah.
But eating any insect, I don't know, because like what is really the difference between, say, like a shrimp and a cricket in terms of like their looks. You know, when I was, this is a fun story, but like when I was a, and I think I've told it on the show probably like a million times, so sorry for repeating myself, but when I was a toddler, I would eat snails, like a baby, like baby toddler, like crawling around kind of in the yard. Mm-hmm. I would pick up snails and eat them. And somehow I, as an adult, like I am grossed out by snails. But then there's a lot of, like right now I'm living in northern Italy, like escargot's on the menu all the time and a lot of people like it. And it's like, I can't eat it now because I'm grossed out. But when I was a baby, I would eat raw snails out of the garden. So,
how about that?
Yeah. So I feel like I really do think the general aversion to all insects, I don't think that that's innate. I think we learn that. Maybe there are specific insects that may be, you know, like spiders that we have.
So just to, and I know we need to move on, but just to put a button on this and to bring it back around to like your own backyard, like one's own backyard. One of the things that's been kind of running in the background as we've been talking about this for me is like when I think about the insects I see in my own yard, if I had to eat one of them, I'm going to take snails off the menu because I feel like I do have tons of snails, and I'm going to take like grasshopper, snails and crickets off the menu because I feel like I've already been given permission to eat those.
Right.
I have an idea. I know what I categorically would 100% avoid, and that includes spiders. And I am afraid of spiders, but I've really come a long way. I feel much more friendly with them now. Now when I am gardening and I pull up a rock and there's a giant wolf spider that, you know, hunkers sort of crouches trying not to be seen.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, buddy, I'm not going to hurt you. Like, that's okay. I'm sorry I interrupted. Whereas like when I was younger, I would have squealed and run away and not been in the garden. And when I say younger, I mean like 20. I mean like 25. I don't mean like 10. I've gotten much better about that. I've gotten much better about orb weavers. Now I can stand right next to them as they're building a web and look at how crazy and scary they look and really say, wow, you're working so hard on that. And the chances are fair that this is going to get broken before you're even done because someone's going to walk into it or birds going to fly. But I definitely don't want to eat them. I do not want to eat spiders. I've decided that I would like some roly-polies. They can go ahead and roll up into a perfect circle, perfect sphere. Mm-hmm. We'll fry them up and then they'll just be like these nice little crunchy bits.
Yeah.
And that feels doable to me. Like that feels even more doable to me in some cases than like, you know, even just thinking about like crickets or snails. Like somehow just because it becomes a shape instead of a creature.
Mm, yes.
If you want to roll yourself up, we could turn them into Dippin' Dots. Like there are options. We have a cereal. We have options for those tiny little roly-polies, which are also very cute and I don't mind crawling on me. So I feel kind of guilty saying that. But another thing I know I won't eat is I forget what their actual name, their like Latin name or their scientific name is, but what we call mustache bugs. I don't need to eat a bug that has all of those legs, like you were saying. I mean, those are like, it's like eating a little brush. It's like eating, I mean, I guess, but when I was growing up, I thought of a millipede and a centipede as being these sort of waxy.
A house centipede is how I know them.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, those things, they are like, I mean, mustache bug makes a lot of sense because they have this brushy look like a walking mustache. And the idea of having to get those little hairy legs down just makes me want to puke.
The mouthfeel on that can't be good. The interesting thing about the roly-poly is those are terrestrial isopods. They are actually...
That's right, they are isopods.
They are related to marine isopods.
They look like fossils.
Yes, they are related to marine isopods. So they are kind of like surf and turf, I guess, all in one.
All in one.
Yeah.
I feel guilty. I'm sorry, little roly-polies. Potato bugs or whatever.
It's fine. The great thing about the pill bugs is you can just take them with a glass of water if you don't like the mouthfeel of the crunching. I feel like ants is kind of cheating. I've eaten ants. They just taste like eating a little grain of pepper.
They're very spicy.
I don't like grubs. Grubs isn't something I want to eat. That's the scene in The Lion King has always grossed me out. Gosh, you know, it's hard. Like, man, I don't like anything that has like a pop to it, like a like a gusher sort of thing. So spiders, definitely not. I don't, You know,
oh no,
like anything where you bite down on it and there's like a pop and like a, you know.
Oh no,
I don't want that.
Ew, you got me.
Yeah, no.
Oh, you're so right.
Yeah,
you're
that's not so a situation right. I want. So it's like, yeah. So what isn't like that? I don't know. I'm trying to think. Oh man, because I was going to say butterfly, but I feel like their bodies. No, that wouldn't be good. That would not be good.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I honestly, like,
what about like a little beetle? Oh, poor beetle.
A little beetle. Like, if it's really small, though, yeah, I feel like crunchy bugs are better than squishy pop,
yeah.
Yeah. bugs that pop in your mouth. Like, that's not, like, I'm even grossed out. Like, I used to have, I don't like killing spiders. Once in a while, it's like a kind of a necessity situation. Yeah. Especially like if it's a venomous species, and it's like, I'm sorry, you know, I gotta kill it.
I'm not, I'm okay killing black
but
widows
that,
and I feel
yes,
bad about
I feel
it,
bad
but
about
like,
it
I don't
too.
Need black widows.
Like, I don't want to, but I will do it. And then, but the popping sound that they make, like when you squish, I hate it. I feel, it's like, I feel guilty and it's disgusting.
No. Put in your cicada earplugs.
Just like, please scream in my ear.
And wear a boot with a big, like a really chunky heel so that you're not, your foot isn't experiencing that.
No, I hate it. It's like, it's like popping a zit, but it's it's a spider.
You're
it's
so right.
No, it's awful. So with any spider that I do not have to, like, that is not venomous, I like leave alone or like, I'll, like transfer outside or something.
Yes,
jumping spiders are adorable and I love them and they can stay in the house because they are really tiny and cute.
I don't know what jumping spider you're talking about, but unfortunately the only most recent jumping spider I had discussed with anyone is like the huntsman spider in Australia, which sounds like the stuff of nightmares.
No, so jumping,
it's really big and
so,
it jumps, but you're talking about something small.
These are not just spiders that jump. There's a whole range of species of these spiders called jumping spiders, and they're tiny and they're cute. And I'm going to find a picture for you, actually, because this is very important.
I mean, does it look like just sort of your average little house spider that's kind of just really small and doing its own thing?
Really, like they're like, to me, they are actively cute. Let me see if I can find like a good representation of why I find them cute. I mean, they are tiny.
It's not a good sign that you're having to comb through multiple photos.
Well, listen, I'm just saying, put one of your best 8 feet forward. It's, here we go. This is a good one because he's waving.
Give me a wave. I'll take the wave.
Here we go.
The scope of my whole day feels like it's been changed by thinking about that pop.
It's a terrible thing.
Well, that looks like a tarantula, kind of,
but they're tiny. They're itty bitty.
But those are tiny. I don't know if I've seen. I mean, I guess if I haven't seen, I might have to look. I mean, I
can show you just a photo of what it looks like on someone's hand, so you can see sort of what it looks like without the close up. Because this is like close up photography. And then this is just what it looks like on someone's hand.
All right, let's have a look at this.
Or finger.
Oh, yeah. Like I mean, I'm sure I've seen those little guys. Yeah, those little guys. Yeah, I don't have a problem with those at all. For sure. I mean, can they also like dangle down on via a web or do they just jump? Like, do you see them floating kind of?
Some
like
of them
you look
might,
like on your range top, I'll look and be like, what are you
them,
doing?
Yeah, most
Why
of
are you
them
doing this?
Aren't really so much going to do that. Like most of them just kind of walk around. They do produce webs to some extent. Some of them are a little bigger. I actually still find the bigger ones cute.
Are they eating gnats and stuff? Like, are they eating like?
Yeah. Yeah, they kind of like hunt down. They're sort
of
more terrestrial.
You're
quite
large. You look like a little fairy kind of. You look like a hairy.
Hairy fairy.
Fairy.
But he's got like a little mustache, which is actually just its pedipalps, the little things on its face.
That's
that can
extremely cute.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, you're kind of getting into like something that, sort of cartoonish looking.
Exactly.
Tarantulas and wolf spiders because I like their fur, because fur, it feels less threatening to me than the hard, what's that called? Precipice? Crepiscape? What is it?
I love those words. Carapace is, I think, what you're looking for, but I love.
I don't need to see a hard. Space. Yeah,
I love that. Those are great words. Even
if I can just get some of the syllables or any of the letters, they don't even have to be in order. I don't need that shiny. I mean, boy, if ever there was a creature that looked venomous, it's the Black Widow. I mean, all power to him.
Yeah.
Again, I will kill them, but it's very impressive how macabre and foreboding they look
very
with those
much,
red bellies.
They as the kids say, they read the assignment.
They read the assignment.
But the funny thing about the hairs, like liking the fuzzy spiders, which I agree with, I think they're cute. A lot of these fuzzy spiders have what are called urticating hairs. They are actually irritating hairs that are meant to like kind of come out like a lot of tarantulas. Like if you pet them, you can actually kind of get a rash because those are meant to be protective
like
hairs.
Cacti,
where it's like,
kind of.
Yeah, where it's like, don't pet me. Like, but some of them you can actually pet because they're not going to hurt you. But a lot of tarantulas, you pet them and then their hairs like kind of come off. And then now you've got a rash on your hand.
Whoops.
But
no, thank you.
Yeah, before we take a break and move on to the next section, if you want to join sort of the cicada tracker community, you can go to cicadasafari.org and kind of submit the photos or observations you make for Cicadageddon 2024. I don't know if they're calling it Cicadageddon. I'm trying to make that happen.
I'll do my best.
I think they even have like an iPhone app. So yeah, cicadasafari.org, and you too can join in on the cicada adventure. So we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have one more short story about citizen scientists discovering something really weird.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
All right.
Great.
So we are back. Citizen science does not just occur in the U.S. It is an international phenomenon. In India, in the Western Ghats, there was a group of herpetology frog enthusiasts just kind of going around making observations, taking photos, and they found a frog with a mushroom growing out of its butt.
Wow. I don't know what I would have needed to do to get ready for this. I know I didn't do it and I'm not ready for it. And I'm looking at a picture and I think I know which thing was a reference to The Last of Us.
It's this. It's definitely this.
Yeah.
So to be a little more honest, it's coming out of its rear flank I don't know if you can call that its butt. I'm gonna say it's its butt.
Right.
And it's like a literal tiny, I'm not talking about a fungal infection, like, oh, you know, athlete's foot. It's a literal.
That's a mushroom.
Little mushroom, like a white stem and a white little cap. It's a tiny mushroom growing out of this poor, cute little innocent frog.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this frog is a, it is called, I forgot its name. I wrote it down. The frog is a Rouse golden-backed frog. Actually, the full name is like Rouse intermediate golden-backed frog, which is a mouthful. I'm just going to call it a little cutie. So it's
great.
It is alive. And so it's not like a situation where it's dead and then the mushroom's growing out of its dead body. That wouldn't be as interesting. No, it's alive. Yeah. And it has this tiny, perfect little mushroom growing out of its rump. These hobbyists, these herpetology hobbyists, like, snapped a picture. They didn't capture the frog because they were being respectful. They didn't want to, like, you know, mess with the environment at all. They, but they took a couple pictures and they published their picture in the Journal of Reptiles and Amphibians. And then from that picture, even more nature enthusiasts like mycologists and like mushroom hobbyists like looked at this mushroom and were like trying to identify, well, what is the mushroom?
Yeah.
We know what the frog is. What's the mushroom? The most likely candidate that they came up with is the bonnet mushroom, which is a Mycena fungus that typically lives on rotting wood and is not known to like be a parasite of frogs. Huh. So this is really interesting.
Wow.
So
what do we do with this?
Right. Like, is this like the start of sort of a Last of Us frog apocalypse?
Yeah.
I mean, probably not. Right. Like it could just be a fluke somehow. There's this thing where sometimes it's actually in, I don't know if you'd call it miasis when it comes to fungus, but when it comes to, say, like larvae that accidentally become parasites, it's called miasis, where it's like, miasis. Say you get like a fly larva in your gut and it's like living there. Ugh. It's not an obligate parasite. It doesn't need to be a parasite, but then it has found its way inside of you and it's making the best out of a bad situation. That is what I would guess is going on with this this mushroom. Like a spore somehow got under this frog's skin or inside of this frog, and then it managed to sprout its way out of the frog. But yeah, it's still, it's like extreme. Like the other option could be that there is a type of fungal infection. There's that fungus. It is actually the fungus that the Last of Us game and TV show is based on. It's called Ophiocordyceps, and that does that does actually infect insects like ants, grasshoppers, spiders. And then grows out of, like, it kills them, but then it, like, sprouts out of their body.
One of the all-time great reality-based...
Yes.
Like, versions of Armageddon.
Yeah, no, I very much appreciate the sort of... I mean, so I did a whole... You can probably look back in the show's history. We did an episode on The Last of Us. Like, mostly, I really love it. There was one, one line where it was, like, they in the show... saying like, oh, there's no treatment for fungus. Like, we've got antibiotics, but we don't have anything to
wait,
treat
what?
Fungus.
That's not true.
It's not true at all. We have antifungals.
Like, in any way. Have you heard of athlete's foot?
Yeah,
Yes,
we have
ringworm?
Antifungals.
Have you heard of, yeah.
And even for, like, brain, like, fungus, like, there are fungi, you know, that can infect the brain. We have treatments for that, too. And it's very effective.
Whoops.
Well, yeah. But, you know, you have to have some kind of dramatic thing going on, I guess. Anyways, so this poor frog, it's got a little mushroom growing out of its butt. Actually,
A cute frog and it's a cute mushroom. They're both cute.
Maybe they're working together. We don't know if this frog is upset with this mushroom. Maybe it doesn't even notice it. Maybe they're friends. Who knows? Because, like, frogs can be infected with fungus. But, again, similar to athlete's foot. It's not like a whole... mushroom, like a whole ass mushroom growing out of the ass of the frog. That's not like generally how fungal infections work in frogs. It's like a fungal infection in a human, you know. Mm-hmm. It's you might see like a film or something on their skin, but it's not going to be like, hey, I'm a mushroom. I'm growing out of this frog. So if you find, if you live in India and you live in the Western Ghats and you find a frog with a mushroom growing out of its butt, do take a photo. I mean, if you live anywhere and you find a mushroom growing out of a frog's
fair,
butt.
Fair enough.
Or anywhere out of the frog, take a photo. You know, because that might be interesting. Who knows? Maybe this is a one-time deal. Maybe it's a new trend. Maybe it's a new sort of frog fashion. We'll only know if we all join together to try to find more mushroom frogs.
I mean, it's very interesting. It's interesting in the sense that, of course, like, I mean, you were, of course, you're talking about the idea of, you know, something being more incidentally parasitic than being, you know, intentionally so. But when I see something like this, like what does jump into my mind is the sort of more, I mean, I guess it's everything that spreads seeds through. But like thinking about, you know, my dog picking up, you know, briars or mm-hmm. picking up, you know, little thistles and stuff, like it intentionally going into his hair so that it can spread to a location that it couldn't get to otherwise. So,
yeah,
it's funny because like obviously this isn't necessarily that, but it does feel like you could in that way imagine somehow the mushroom is like, I'd like to travel more. You know what I mean? I just don't get out enough.
Yeah. Dispersal is very important for a lot of sort of immobile organisms. And so in a way, like that's what Ophiocordyceps is doing with the insects. So one could imagine that this could adapt in order to use the frogs. And in a lot of cases, like an adaptation, maybe sort of, you know, it is like a random thing that can happen, either a random mutation or something that happens, right? Like maybe originally with the Ophiocordyceps, like a curious ant eats it, you know, they eat these spores and then this starts to happen. And then the fungus adapts more and more in order to exploit this situation. So, you know, like even if this is an accident, right, it could the course of evolution could make it less and less of an accident where this mushroom is like, actually, I've got a pretty sweet deal here growing out of this frog. I got free transportation.
Yeah. Are you kidding me? Absolutely. And as far as that poor little ant, listen, we like curiosity. Don't feel like you can't be curious, but maybe just don't eat something in the wild that you're not sure what it is.
These ants.
You can be curious and learn. You don't have to learn by eating a fungus you're not sure about.
Spores and you, just say no. The DARE program for ants did not work. Yeah. Nancy Reagant was not right on this issue. So
wow.
Before we go, we do got to play a little game. It is called the Guess Who Squawk and Mystery Animal Sound game. Every week I play a mystery animal sound and you, the listener, and you, the guest, try to guess who is making that sound. The hint last week was this. This bearded fellow is the bell of the ball.
Whoa.
All right. So, Janet,
whoa,
do you have
what happened at the end?
It's a same animal. New sound, same animal.
That was, it dropped a sick beat at the end. Yeah. Okay. This bearded beauty is the bearded beauty? This bearded beauty.
Bearded fellow is the bell of the ball.
Bearded fellow.
Who's to say he's not beautiful, though?
Okay. So it's a, so bearded. The thing that is confusing for me is like, I'm realizing that I don't know if we use the word beard across like a bunch of different fauna or. If it, because I feel like when I think of beard, I feel like, okay, well, I know that the people talk about bearded lizards. I know people talk about like, you know, bearded primates. People talk about, you know, bearded dogs. Have I heard a beard described, like who's, is there a bird out there that's being described as being bearded? I don't know. So, but probably, I mean, I guess probably, but beard is funny to imagine with something with a beak.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess so. The problem was is that my first inclination when I heard that sound was to go monkey,
mm-hmm.
Because I heard bearded and immediately was like, oh, okay, well, you know, that's a chitter or a chirp that could maybe be a bird or maybe be a monkey. Again, as a total layperson who has no idea about anything. But then you hit me with the sounds at the end, and now I feel even more confused. That feels like, again, could not know less about animals. The something about the rhythmic nature of that almost felt more like, well, it felt like it was coming from the chest or throat somehow more, like the sort of pulse of like, like it's this mm-hmm. kind of exhalation of sound more than like up in the front of the mouth or the beak. And I don't know if that, again, I'm basing this on absolutely nothing. But that kind of freaked me out because it was so consistent for so long. That felt like maybe more of a bird sound. Mm-hmm. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm completely and totally stumped, and it may be none of the things I've mentioned and be a totally different creature, and I have no idea.
You, for someone who keeps saying like, oh, I don't know anything about animals, your ability to zero in on the right questions is very impressive because you're right. This is a bird.
Okay.
And it is coming from the throat. And you're right that this is a bearded bird. This is the bearded bell bird. So,
oh, bell of the ball. There was even more information packed into that clue than I realized.
Yes, the clues. It's all Mr. Policeman, I've left all the clues. I don't remember them. but yeah, this is a bird found in South America. It is found in Venezuela, Trinidad, Tobago, and northern Brazil. It lives in humid forests. They are frugivorous.
Oh, there you are. Oh, my goodness. You really have a beard.
They really have a beard.
You look like you hung it, or you hung it around your neck.
It is. These are. It kind of looks like
outrageous.
Feathers, but these are not feathers. These are actually wattles. So these are fleshy projections.
Wow.
Coming off of their chin. They are otherwise, you know, they're nice looking. They have sort of like a brown head, a white body, and black wings.
Wow.
But it's that beard that is so unique about them.
And I have to say, it's clearly wattles. I mean,
yes.
To me, it doesn't look like feathers. You really can see that it has the consistency of like almost like rubber. Like you,
yes,
would, if you tapped
rubbery.
Against them, they would be like, wah, 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 wah,
yeah.
Wah.
They
and
I,
what
I,
did they need that for?
That is to attract the ladies to be as sexy as possible. you don't find that handsome?
I love it. I'm just so amazed because it's just one of those times where, you know, look, I know we're not supposed to anthropomorphize, and I know that, you know, we can't relate everything to humanity. But that being said, it's just so funny that, you know, that's a real aesthetic choice. Like mm-hmm. like a strapping dude with like a big, great lumberjack beard.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a look, and that's a look that, you know, some people call like the Portland, Oregon look. You know, also like being bald and having a big beard. Like
yeah.
I have several friends who sort of are rocking that look and they wear it well. And I like them better with beards. I like my friends who have those beards. I like them better with them.
Yes.
And so it's amazing to me, again, no shade to this bird unless it wants it, which it does because it's in
yeah,
Venezuela.
It's in
so it's
forest,
got a lot
yeah.
of green.
Arboreal.
So some shade as a gift. It's just very funny that it's like, oh, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Facial hair looks. Yeah.
You know,
it's a good look for some people.
You mentioned that it's like not good to anthropomorphize, but I would say it's OK in some situations, especially when it comes to birds aesthetic choice, because a lot of these choices are complete. They seem to be pretty subjective and with no real practical purpose. Right. Like, does this
mm-hmm.
waddle actually do anything? Well, not necessarily. It could just be that the females are like, that looks good. I like that.
Yeah.
As is the call. The call is to attract the females over. And it's very, very loud. It's one of the loudest bird calls. And that is in order to get females to come over from great distances. And then once they get there, he will show off his amazing bird, his amazing beard, his plumage, and hope that she is impressed. And so, yeah, I mean, kind of like people.
And I have to say too, I mean, as part of that, like you hear that, and I was thinking about that in terms of some of the little froggies in Hawaii, for example, like part of being living inside of kind of a jungle environment, it seems like everybody's trying to be louder than everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So it must make everyone so loud
yes.
because there are so many sounds and calls happening in a really lush landscape like that, that no
yeah.
wonder everybody has to play their music a little bit louder than everybody else, you
it
know?
Is, it
also,
is, yes, exactly.
This led me to, it also offered me up, there's lots of wonderful pictures of the bearded bellbird, but it also offered me up the three-wattled bellbird.
Yes, that's
I don't know
one.
If you've seen this. I mean, that is an amazing, like, sort of Fu Manchu mustache.
Yes.
And it is very special indeed. So it I have is. Two new favorite birds.
The bellbirds are quite ostentatious. I highly encourage you to explore them all. But yeah, their facial business is incredible, and diverse. And yeah, absolutely. They are competing for, yes.
You
no,
I, this I, mating moment of
oh,
like, she's so, sitting she's nearby like, going, yes, yes, more, please.
Mm-hmm. Sing
oh, amazing.
To me. Yeah, it's amazing. It is very cute and kind of pathetic the way male birds go to such lengths to impress the females.
No kidding.
So on to the next mystery animal sound. The hint is this. Well, I've already given you a hint this episode, so no more hints. All right, you got any guesses?
I mean, based on the hint about the hint, I guess I would say it sounds like it could be a... And God, that's an irritating sound. Between that and the sound of drones in the park when you're just like wanting to have a nice quiet walk.
You don't want to hear...
And the sound of a mosquito in your ear. I mean, those are...
Like a weed whacker.
Those metallic... Yeah, those metallic, multi-level metallic, mm-hmm. persistent buzzes. Unfortunately, to me, if you wanted to make a horror movie about people going crazy, not unlike, you know, the sort of like great... You know, great and good rabid zombie, you know, sort of like, oh, this is like rabies, it wants to spread by blah blah blah. If there's some incentive to having a sound that makes people want to hurt each other, I mean, I just feel my temper is so much shortened by being in that noise for a length of time.
I wish you had written Bird Box, because I think you could have made it
there
better.
There you go.
Yeah. You are absolutely correct. So, which means I'm going to bleep out just your correct answer so other people can guess. But the people do know. They will know that you are correct. And so you can... You have won the prize, which is... A thumbs up. Good job.
Yay! That's all I want. Well, I'm a people pleaser. Just give me that thumbs up. Just give me that A.
Yes. A plus with a little sticker.
Wonderful.
One of those scratch and sniffs, you know, like a little
even better.
Bundle of grapes or an orange or something. Man, I love
those.
Well, Janet, thank you so much for joining me today. Where can people find you?
Katie, they can find me, I guess, mostly on Instagram. I'm decent on Instagram, though. Please don't DM me. Find me at my website, janetvarney.com. I never check my DMs, but on Instagram, at the JV Club. And you can listen to my podcast on Maximum Fun, the JV Club. You can also listen to my podcast about Avatar, The Last Airbender, and The Legend of Korra that I do for Nickelodeon Paramount, which is called Braving the Elements. And if for some reason you're a true crime buff, in addition to being a fan of all things natural and wonderful, you can also find me on Truth and Justice, which is a wrongful convictions podcast.
Amazing.
Thanks for having me. I would do this every day. This is so fun. I love your podcast.
If Janet's voice sounds familiar and you're an Avatar The Last Airbender fan, she is the voice of Korra. You've done other voices as well. I have this thing that happens when, like, you know, I watched a lot of cartoons because I refused to grow up, and I if I hear a voice actor or actress and I'm like, how do I know you? Like, where do I know you from? Right? Because your voice is
I do the same.
Yeah, where it's like your voice is a little different from the character you voice, because you're an actress, you do an actual character. Then it's like, man, where do I know you from?
Yeah, that's well, I always like to say Korra is just kind of stays at a more consistent, less cartoonish level, which is sort of ironic that, like, the cartoon I'm best known for is just the most kind of cool version of my voice, and then I'm more of a cartoon than she is. So that's kind of how that panned out. But
it's like the NPR voice, but
that's right,
a fantasy, yes.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. And if you are enjoying the podcast and you leave a review, I read all of them, every single one. I print them out and I just kind of stack them up And then, you know, I'll, you know, like in the movies where they put a bunch of money and then roll around on it for some reason. I do that with reviews, podcast reviews.
Wonderful.
And thank you so much to the Space Cossacks for their super awesome song, Exo Lumina. Creature Features, a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts like the one you just heard, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or hey, guess what? Wherever you listen to your favorite shows, I don't judge you. I'm not your mother. I can't tell you what to do. You got to make these decisions for yourself. Fly, baby birds. You fly on your own now. It's time. See you next Wednesday.
Are you ready to take charge of your health journey? Look no further than Trinity School of Natural Health. With their flexible online programs, you can receive the comprehensive education you need to care for your loved ones or step into the thriving field of natural health. Why choose Trinity? Because their programs offer more than just coursework. You'll interact with experienced instructors, connect with like-minded peers, and even participate in optional live events to hone your skills. If you've ever thought about becoming a certified natural health professional, the CNHP program at Trinity School of Natural Health is the perfect certification course. You'll equip yourself with the knowledge and skills to make a real difference in the lives of others. Turn your passion for natural health into a rewarding career. Visit trinityschool.org today to learn more about the Certified Natural Health Professional Certification Program. Go to trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org. Trinity School of Natural Health. Transform your life. Transform the world.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.